That's a familiar soundscape, especially if you live in a big city or commute to one. Maybe you've been stuck in a motionless cab running late for something and thought about just getting out and running instead. Jad Slayman of WHYY's The Pulse takes a look at how cars became king in our cities and how, as congestion grows, some neighborhoods are trying to reclaim the streets.
Kids skate around, dart back and forth, playing tag and soccer. They scream for no apparent reason. It feels like a playground at recess, but it's a city street, 78th Street to be exact, in Jackson Heights, New York City. Almost a whole block of it has been closed to car traffic since 2011. 8-year-old Alexandria and her friends pass around a volleyball. This is her favorite part of the neighborhood.
Because, like, it's large, and also, like, I get to have space to play soccer and other different sports.
Jackson Heights is a diverse, densely packed part of Queens. It's got far less park space than almost every other city neighborhood. Alexandria's older cousin, Sarah, says when the city blocked off the street for the first time, it was weird.
I don't know. It was because, like, we're not used to it because I was so used to cars passing by.
It was a good kind of weird.
Yeah, it was a good kind of weird.
Locals don't think it's weird anymore. In fact, they want more of the street. They're fighting for it. Officials had promised to close the whole block eventually. Standing in their way now, of all things, is a car dealership at one end. They opened last year and want to keep cars flowing in and out of a service entrance. But locals refuse to back down.
We're not going to give up one single inch.
A group of activists first started working on closing the street more than a decade ago, and there was a lot of pushback.
There was fear that we were going to lose parking places. There was fear that we were going to cause traffic on adjacent streets. There was fear that there was going to be, that all of a sudden there's going to be, like, gang turf battles in this street.
That's Donovan Finn, an urban planning professor who was part of the push and lived in the neighborhood. Gatekeepers, as he calls them, city officials, community board members, thought he was nuts.
When you tell people you're going to close a piece of street, I just can't fathom it.
The thing is, Finn was waging a kind of insurgency in a war cars had won decades ago. It was a battle over who the streets were for, and about 100 years ago, it was life and death.
The automobiles were killing people at an incredible rate.
That's Peter Norton, a technology historian and author of Fighting Traffic, a book about how cars made their way into our cities in the first place.
And in cities, the people getting killed were overwhelmingly pedestrians. Many of them were children.
In the 1910s, he says, people had different ideas about what a street was supposed to be.
There were no lanes, no center lines, no line markings. People could stroll where they wanted.
There'd be the occasional streetcars or Model Ts, but no one really looked out for them or even made an effort to get out of their way, probably because early traffic laws made cars super slow.
In the 8 or 10 mile an hour range, I mean, extremely slow by our standards.
If you can just outrun a car, you're not going to buy one. So Norton says car companies lobbied against laws restricting automobiles and for laws restricting pedestrians. We get jaywalking. In Kansas City in 1912, people used to owning the street were offended and angry.
There's one episode where women struck police officers with their parasols for being told not to walk in the street.
So Norton says authorities added an element of public shaming. Here's how one Los Angeles official went about it.
He even recommended that if it was a woman jaywalker, that the police officer should pick her up and carry her back to the curb, because he said this would be so humiliating that it would prevent her from jaywalking ever again.
Meanwhile, it became cheaper to ride in a jitney, a low-cost, unofficial taxi. Think Uber before Uber. And cars got cheaper, too.
The private automobile, even though still relatively few people were driving their own car to work, it didn't take very many of such people to get in the way of the streetcars.
Public transit was getting stuck in traffic and less convenient. In the 50s, lawmakers subsidized thousands of miles of highway.
A 41,000-mile network of our most important roads.
But the final victory for cars, Norton said, started with the kids. By the mid-20s, the top funder of public school safety education was the American Automobile Association, AAA.
They took over the safety patrols, guided the children to school, and helped them cross the street safely. And their message to children was, streets are for automobiles.
As adults, that was ingrained in them. They simply knew the streets were for cars, and the rest is history. Norton isn't a big fan of cars. I expected him to bike to the office, but no, he backs out of his driveway in a four-wheel internal combustion automobile.
And I think that quite arguably makes me a total hypocrite. But my answer is that, like other people, I have to live in the world we've got.
Cars won. That's the world we live in. Millions like Norton have no train they can walk to, no reliable bus. They can't pedal along on a freeway from the suburbs. Even in big cities, public transit is often underfunded and struggling. But is the auto victory a permanent one?
Somewhere around 2003, 2004, I began to notice that people were driving a little less in cities around the country.
That's Sam Schwartz, a.k.a. Gridlock Sam. He's the New York urban planner who coined the term gridlock. Driving had dipped before, during the Great Depression or the World Wars, but always recovered and grew very quickly. Driving also decreased during the latest recession, which Sam says was expected. But then, after the recovery, when you'd expect rates to shoot right back up, they didn't. And that hadn't happened before.
Millennials were driving 20 to 25% fewer miles. When you see shifts, they're usually very gradual. This was a quantum jump.
Federal data shows rates continued to drop, except among the poorest millennials. Schwartz says that tells him younger Americans want to get by without owning cars. Schwartz knows a thing or two about that. In the 70s, he tried and almost succeeded in getting cars out of a huge chunk of Midtown Manhattan, some 60 blocks.
All cars were going to be banned from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m.
He got so far as stamping out the signs, but a new mayor scrapped it last minute. It was just too radical. But Schwartz says his ideas aren't so radical anymore. It's not a car ban, but in April, New York officials announced congestion pricing was coming to Manhattan.
New York City is set to become the very first city in the nation to levy a congestion tax on drivers.
Shove this down my throat just like you shoved the bicycle lanes down my throat, and now you want me to pay for it.
Charged roughly 10 bucks for driving into the city, anywhere between 60...
The fees go to public transit. The idea is less car traffic in dense urban cores, and it's worked in Singapore and London. American cities are watching New York's experiment, and with good reason. In big downtowns, cars are slowing to a crawl. The average speed in Midtown Manhattan last year, 4.7 miles per hour. Experts point to the influx of Lyfts and Ubers, more solo car trips. And Schwartz says we can't pave our way out of congestion anymore.
If we go to Houston, where they kept widening the Katy Freeway to the point where now it has 26 lanes and the traffic is worse. It didn't work.
It's likely the world's widest freeway. Traffic got better when it was first expanded, but eventually slowed right back down.
You get up in the morning and you're like, thank God I get to go sit in my car for an hour in traffic.
That's Lynn Richards, president of the Congress for the New Urbanism.
Nobody wants that as an outcome.
They're a collective of engineers and policy wonks. They push for improved public transit and fret over what cars have done to our cities and, by extension, our health and environment. Richards says one challenge is getting people to imagine their lives without cars. Public fear is a big obstacle. And she says one way around that, get tactical.
It's called tactical urbanism.
Start with small car-free spaces and make it temporary so no one freaks out. 78th Street in Queens, that actually started as a temporary thing too. A couple weekends in the summer, then the whole summer, then, hey, why not the whole year?
Very quickly, you know, kids were learning to ride bikes here. People were having birthday parties for their kids.
That's Finnegan, one of the activists behind the 78th Street closure. The most encouraging thing to him? These kids are growing up learning at least one street isn't for cars. It's for them. For Here and Now, I'm Jad Slaman.